Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I know we have been on a bit of a hiatus because of the Thanksgiving holiday, but I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the Hotel series. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, my hostess with the mostest, Allison Martin, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Today we have the author of the... It's not released today. It's released next week.
Yeah, tomorrow. No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Oh my gosh. Teresa Bell, author of the short fiction collection, Tell Me What You See. Tarina. God.
We're allowed to do COVID brain.
I have COVID brain, everyone. I didn't want to say COVID within the first 30 seconds of the show, but here it is.
But it is.
COVID.
Yeah. And
it's
when
because
I was
of COVID.
Say, it's and Tarina's book has stories featuring COVID, and people know we are known for our really poor taste prop comedy, and there's nothing in worse taste than having a host with COVID for a book that features stories including time during COVID. So Jen, thank you for just getting to the spirit of this show.
We
asked you to do that.
I know Allison was like, should we put off this week's show? And
sure.
I was like,
sure, why not?
In our honor of always doing prop comedy, I will be the COVID prop this week.
Your lungs are the prop.
My lungs are the prop. Tarina, thank you for being here. Allison and I both read your collection, Tell Me What You See, over the past week. So thank you so much for making that available to us. And also, golly.
Yikes. Yeah.
Golly, in the best way.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, it just is listed as a short story collection, but I loved how many different genres you kind of wedged in there, because some of it was speculative and some of it was, I don't know if you would be considering it something that's meta or even just, I don't want to say offbeat, but the use, one of them that's told almost entirely through texts. What would you call that kind of style of storytelling? Does that even have a name?
I think we're just labeling experimental fiction. Now, if it had a name, it would be Tarina, because always just done things the way I felt like doing them. But technically we're saying experimental fiction, but you're right in that there are some pieces in it that are very traditional. Like the one set in outer space, you know, to me reads like traditional or the biblical.
And it's amazing that you just said the piece that takes place in outer space is the most traditional.
I think that's true.
And I love that so much, because I thought that while reading it, I'm like, this piece is what I referred to it to Allison when she and I were talking about your work, Botanists in Space.
Yeah, Botanists in Space. Yeah.
Sex.
Space Raspberries.
Space Raspberries is a more traditional story, quote unquote.
Yeah. It just is. And it's funny, like one of the stories, like when I originally wrote New York, March 2020, and I realized that most people who are joining us haven't seen the collection yet, because, you know, it doesn't go on sale until tomorrow. But that particular piece, it's shaped like, you know, those posters of cities that are supposedly shaped like the cities, and they have the names of all the neighborhoods, and people who have never been to that city buy them at Pier 1 and hang them over their couch. When I actually kind of wrote that or put it together, I kept calling it a poem. And then when I was putting together the short story collection, I was like, well, this goes, but it's technically a poem. And I was like, no, actually, it's a fake Pier 1 poster. I can call it whatever I want.
You can call it whatever you want. Yeah. And, you know, and it is definitely a poem. It's also, you know, in so many ways, it's like a love song to what certain places of the country we're going through, especially Manhattan. But a lot of our country was going through these experiences, especially Manhattan, during the early stages of COVID. Yeah. And that being said, you weren't writing, like, it didn't seem like you were writing something that was like, let's harp on all the awful things that happened to us. No. It was very beautiful.
Thank you.
And it really felt like a tribute to the people who lived through that. And it's far enough away now, even though Jennifer still currently has COVID, but the lockdown time period and the uncertainty and all of that was just expressed in such a beautiful way. Now, we didn't get a chance to ask you about who you are because I was just rambling about your fiction. Because you are, and you have this lovely accent because you were originally from Kentucky, but you are also a Manhattanite. So were you there? I'm assuming you were there when all that happened and all of that was just your own experience outpouring onto the page.
Yeah, I was here, and it's funny because there's one story that's set in both Manhattan and Kentucky, and then there are other stories like the Alzheimer's story in my mind that's set in Kentucky, but it doesn't say.
It never says where that is.
Right, not at all. Like there are a lot of stories like that just because I'm from Kentucky and that's my schema, like in my
head. That's default Kentucky.
Right, exactly. But it is a very Manhattan-centric collection, and that's because there was so much difference in the, and I'm so sorry. One thing my Mac does when I'm getting a phone call and I don't know how to turn it off, it bumps everything away. So y'all are gone. Are you still able?
Okay. We are still here.
And you don't look any different.
Gotten this spam caller from Carrollton, Kentucky to leave me alone. So
it's probably one of your relatives saying,
it's one
girl,
of your relatives saying,
How are you
doing in Manhattan? Is that COVID still bad? Oh God, terrible accent.
But it's almost like all those, it's funny, like one of the stories that is set in text, like she's even getting texts from somebody whose number she doesn't even have saved. And they're like, is this still your number? You know, no, but
you are so.
I will say, Tarina, I loved that so much. And I'm not somebody who is from Manhattan, but I am in the Northeast. And when the lockdown happened, we obviously didn't have what Manhattan had, but we locked down pretty hardcore. And all the Manhattanites were coming to New Hampshire to their lake houses. Mm-hmm. And so we had like a pretty strict lockdown. And I just remember getting a ton of texts from people that I hadn't talked to in many years who lived in Ohio, who I hadn't talked to in forever. And they were just like, are you okay? I'm like,
they have zero concept of the Northeast.
Yeah.
Close to what?
Okay. Yeah. But I'm guilty of that because so my sister, we grew up other than being born in Pennsylvania, we grew up in California. And so the other parts of the country are all kind of hazy to us, like Pier 1 posters that we don't really know the cities. My sister moved to Texas a few years ago. And anytime I hear anything about Texas, I'm like, how close is this to you? Because I know Texas is bigger than most countries, right?
It used to be a country.
But I don't actually know. She's in Austin. I don't know where these other places are in relation to Austin. So if something bad happens, I'm like, where are you? And are you okay? She's fine. She's always fine. But some things like when the state froze over and their senator left, I mean, that's totally fine. And she got through that, but they were like boiling snow and all sorts of ridiculous things. And that actually did impact her. But other times she's like, Allison, that's 500 miles away. Yeah. I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel you. I've got a very good college friend who is in Houston, and it probably took me 10 years to figure out that he was in the suburb of Houston, because he would always say the suburb and I couldn't figure out what it was. And you can fit the entire country of France inside the borders of Texas.
Yeah. Oh, easy.
Yeah. But it's funny because like in New York, like relatively Manhattan is not that far from Brooklyn. Like I've got a really good friend who actually grew up 20 minutes from where I grew up in Kentucky. We didn't know each other until we moved to the city. We met up here, you know, and he's in Brooklyn, and that's, you know, it's only like a 45 minute one way subway ride for me. But you are right that it's a very Manhattan centric collection. And like the story with the text, it's called hashtag Corona Life. And I wrote that, Jennifer, you almost made me cry a little bit ago because.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because of my very active COVID and my COVID face.
But like showing, no. It's me crying. So it's not my sinuses. But you were talking about it. Like, I don't even know if you used the phrase love letter, but I meant that story to be a love letter to New York.
Yeah. And it read as in love letter to New York.
Yeah, that's what it was. And the fact that it came across that way and that you're articulating that in a similar way, it just, we write these things. And anybody in the
audience start like openly crying and then probably coughing.
Anybody who's a writer, you know, who's listening to this, you know that you write these things and they're not always interpreted the way that you meant them. But part of that is the beauty of literature. that somebody can completely get something else out of it. And then they can go through like a little undergraduate English major and prove it. And you're like, oh, wonderful. I wrote something with multiple meanings that comes across and makes sense to 19-year-olds.
Layers.
Who are being overly esoteric. Yippee.
Some of us have never gotten that, Tarina. Right.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, when something comes across exactly as you meant it to somebody, like, I've never seen your face before tonight. And you live in a different state,
It's the COVID.
But it's just when it comes across the way that you meant it. And then that story in particularly, I spent maybe like 3 weeks isolating myself and going through all these pictures. And we can talk about this later because I need to get back to the why it's Manhattan specific, but like it whacked the, am I allowed to say shit on here?
Oh yeah, you can swear. You can do all the swears.
Now that I've already said it.
This is always our favorite when somebody's like, may I say motherfucker? And we're like, oh, sure.
That's fine.
You realize my mother is live streaming this on Facebook.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. But Tarina's
highly offended.
No, but I have COVID.
No, it's
we're gonna blame COVID brain for that one too. All right.
Yeah, but when things come across the way that you meant them, it's like it was worth it. Mm-hmm. And going back to why this is Manhattan specific, what a lot of people don't know, and like Allison was talking about, like New Hampshire to New York looks fairly close to somebody from an entirely different part of the country on a map. You know, but here in New York, the experience got very, very, very micro. To where my friend in Brooklyn had an entirely different experience than I did. Yeah. I lived under the flight path of the helicopters carrying dead bodies. He did not. He had milk where he lived. I didn't have any milk anywhere. He had fireworks going off nonstop every hour of the day in a circular pattern around his home. I did not. I didn't have any of the fireworks.
Why were they fireworks?
Motorcycle people. Okay. Like, and the Mad Max motorcycle people were unique to Manhattan and the Bronx.
Because we had fireworks out here for no reason, but that's just what happens out here is people are like, oh, look, we can still get them. And you can drive across the border and get them pretty easy.
Yeah. And they were like teenagers who were bored and they'd go out there at 3 a.m. and shoot off enough damn fireworks that you think you were in a war zone. You know, so, like that's, and, yeah, but we didn't have that here. So I couldn't write about that.
I write about what you lived through.
Right. Yeah. And I don't want to say like, oh, I loved your experience, Tarina, your coaching.
That's the worst thing to say.
But I just think you wrote about a very unique experience, which a lot of us don't have, obviously, when we're not in Manhattan during the lockdown. But a lot of us had other unique experiences that now we look back on and go, I cannot, like, we're going to talk about this 30 years from now and say, this is what it was like during the early days of the lockdown. And people are going to go, I'm sure it wasn't like that.
Yes,
it was. And you wrote about something that was very specifically New York, but also I will say heartbreaking to our country as a whole, because I know I'm in the Northeast, I'm in New Hampshire, we were under a strict lockdown, Allison's in California. We were all for a very long time looking at New York City, listening to New York's daily briefings. Yeah. And your reality, I couldn't fathom. I lost my job. I lost everything. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. But like, I couldn't understand really what was going on in New York, but I understood the same way we'd felt that in the past for other things, that it was just something that this is what's shaping our universe. What's happening in New York is what's going to like affect us for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. And people, it's funny. I did not even realize that I don't know why anybody who didn't live in New York State had to watch Cuomo every day. That doesn't make sense to me.
I think in some ways we were looking at New York as a bellwether for where the rest of us were going. Where I lived, we had decent lockdowns that kept us all from dying, but there was a lot of pushback. So I felt when I was reading it that I was looking at the real divide where I live with people on both sides, because the text coming in going, oh, well, you know, we don't really need this, or I don't really understand this. And they're not under the flight path of the bodies.
Right. Well, and see, and then the thing about it is, like, I didn't even, you talk about people not understanding what was going on in other places. I had no idea that people who didn't live within New York State were, I didn't know that the briefings were on national news.
Yeah.
I did not know that they were like cut ins while my aunt is trying to watch Young and the Restless, you know, like I didn't
my know. Mom watching General Hospital for the last, like, her entire life was just like, I don't understand why that rude Italian is doing this to me. And I'm like, Mom, just wear a mask.
Like he was like, Miss Gordon, paging Miss Gordon.
Miss Gordon, can you please put on your mask when you go to Sully's Superette, please?
Yeah.
Put on a mask.
It's funny though, like, and I found out, like, when an uncle of mine was like, why do they have to put him on TV every damn day? And I'm like, well, because we need to know what, he's like, yeah, but I don't. And I was like, actually, Uncle David, you don't.
That is actually a fair point.
No, but it's funny because, you know, that shows how different the experiences were. And it was just like this last May when my parents found out about some of the things that happened to me. And they were very good parents through all of it. We remained in great touch. You know, they were very informed. I think they may have watched more of the briefings than I did. But there were things that they thought had, like, happened to my friends. And I was like, and then, like, I, or that, like, I'd heard about on the news. And I'm like, no, mother, that happened to me. And my mother's face just, like, fell, and, like, she felt horrible because she was like, I didn't know what my baby is going through. And it's like, you knew everything that, like, we had time and patience to tell. It's like, you never know whether it's COVID or mental health or, you know, familial issues. You never know what another person is going through unless you are that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that was in that particular story, it didn't necessarily happen to me. You know, like, it's not auto fiction. But it happened to a person that I know one-on-one in New York, like, as opposed to, like, saw it on the news or anything like that. Like, it happened to me. It happened to, you know, my friend Caroline. It happened to, you know, my doorman, you know, or whatever. And it's just, that's part of why I wrote that was, I didn't think, I don't know, part of me thought it would never get published because, like, the pictures and the margins and everything.
So this is what I want to talk about, weirdly, the pictures and the margins. Yes.
Yeah, but I wanted it all documented because I was like, if nobody ever reads this until 20 years from now, you know, at the start of the pandemic, I had a 5-year-old niece who is now a 7-year-old niece. And I thought, if nobody ever reads this until she is old enough and she asks me about it, I don't know, because of school, I'm just going to hand her this.
It's for her.
Yeah.
It's for her.
So I wrote that. I was a 5-year-old in West Virginia.
Like, kind of an odd audience, but all right. Yeah.
I know. My target audience is a 5-year-old West Virginian girl. She's just a baby now, but here you are.
From the future. In space.
For the future. I know Allison and I talked about in our incessant, long-winded text chains, which I feel like they are important. What an amazing collection this is, first.
It's fantastic.
Oh, it's so good. And we'll bounce back to, like, how you got on our show. But it's so good. When I was reading it, like, I just, like, kept in my head going, this is how we as writers should write. Like, and I'm going to say a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter to you. Who cares about format? Which I know that's not what this is. Who cares if it's strange and weird? Who cares if there's photos? This is all what I want to, this is like the fantasy that I want to, that I want you to tell me.
Writing like everybody else when even format has meaning. Think about it.
Yes. When format has meaning. I loved every bit of it. I loved when the writing got very faint. I loved when there was a random picture. I loved the weird paragraph stuff. I'm like, yes.
Okay. So I have to get into this only because I finally have new glasses after months. And I was reading them with some of the fainter words before I had my new glasses and it was killing me. It was worth it. But I can actually see again now. So there's that.
Yeah. As somebody who old glasses can give me physical headaches and make me sick at my stomach,
same.
The more fine stuff I have to look at, I thank you. Thank you. I probably owe you a gift.
No, but the book was the gift. So thank you. You already gave us the book. So here's the thing, and I will say this now. I am an audio addict. I don't know if they will release this or even could release this as an audio. You cannot get the audio for this. You have to see it. You have to see these because in this, I've never seen one because this book is a work of art in how all of it is, and not just for the Pier 1 poster. Because that one is two, but because I mean, I guess if everything else was standard and it was just the form of like the Pier 1 poster, we're just going to call that piece that now. Then you could maybe say, oh, there's a digital download of that one. You can look at that. But you need the format of all of this in order to understand not just, well, what's happening, but the style, because that factors into why things are happening, including, as you said, the one, the piece that's probably, I think it's one page long about Alzheimer's. Is just it just that I'm sure that broke Jen too, but it broke me, and it's literally a page long.
It was all right. Here's the thing, everybody, you should buy this book specifically, if not for all of it, just for that piece, because people who watch our show and listen to us. Buy it for that.
And because here's the thing. Some of you might be listening going, oh, all this talk of Corona, I'm not over Corona. Jen currently has COVID. Maybe you're like, I'm not ready for it. Okay. That's
no one's ready for
pieces.
It.
Well, first off, that's but only two cares? Pieces. So have that for later for your five-year-old niece in Kentucky. Because we all have five-year-old nieces in Kentucky, don't we? Probably. But beyond that.
Buy it for botanists in space.
There's botanists in space. And the last piece.
I know. I'm so sorry, Tarina. You're like,
it's the perfect comic to be after all.
It's like Muppets in space.
It's called Privacy Room, is it not?
It is called Privacy
Room. Privacy Station. Yeah.
Privacy Station.
Okay. So it's got privacy in there. It's not called Botanists in Space or Space Raspberries or any of the things that we might try to call it.
Or like sexy plant growing. The TV show,
the reproduction.
No, I think is
the reproduction.
The name that airs on Lifetime.
What airs on Lifetime?
Like if Lifetime buys the film rights, I think sexy plant growing would be a good.
I know it legitimately would be like raspberries ellipsis question mark with like, but the question mark would also be like it's somehow a naked woman.
To clue in our audience, the male character, the berries are all gone, and the male character keeps trying to bring back the raspberry because it's his favorite. And he has this kind of, like, I won't call it an epiphany. Maybe it's the emotional climax of the book. And he's like, did you ever taste a raspberry? They were gone. They were wonderful. So that's why they keep making the raspberry.
I know. Sorry, audience. It's not a spoiler.
No, but here's the thing, and we started like when I wanted to talk about how would I describe this collection to someone else, because we've had anthology authors on before, and we've read short fiction before, but I don't know if I've ever read something by a single author that has the breadth and the variety that yours does, and it's not even a long collection, so we're not talking about, oh, it's this huge tome, so yeah, you get a lot over this course. It's almost like a tasting menu. Where it's the very best of every kind of style. And I mean, like you said, there's a biblical retelling of Esther in there. And I'm just like, this is about Esther. And of course, I wanted, after wanting the raspberries, I wanted Hamantaschen. And I'm not even Jewish, but the little hats made after, never mind. That's something, things I learned about.
They sell them at markets here. It was the first time I'd ever seen them in my life. And I'm glad to hear you pronounce them because I always thought it was like Hamachin.
Okay. I'm talking
about in Kentucky, they sell them?
No, in Manhattan, they would. No, but
they thought about like West Side Market and Zabar and stuff.
No, and it's one of those things, but it's this almost irreverent retelling of the Esther story with some of the, like the palace is called Suzanne. Okay, sure. And yet it still was the story. And it's like, hey, we're going from botanists in space and living through COVID in New York to a biblical retelling. And I've never seen a collection where we're just all over the map like that. And yet every piece works.
Everything felt like I didn't let you, I'm sorry, Allison. I just cut you off. Like, no, I agree. Cause like, I don't feel like anything was like weirdly out of place. Mm-mm. It felt like a very complete wholehearted collection.
Yeah.
But you're right. Esther was in the same universe as Botanists in Space,
as Alzheimer's, as living
as COVID.
COVID. And yet each of these pieces made sense in their own way. Yeah. I wanted to ask, when you, I mean, let's just talk industry for a second. Did you decide, okay, I want to do a collection, and then they approved which pieces, or you had a collection and then said, here it is? What was the process? How did this come to life?
It involved a lot of the Beatles Abbey Road medley. We'll be honest.
Back up.
What happened when January 6th happened last year?
We canceled our show.
Wow.
Yeah, because we were supposed to go on January 6th, and our guests had people in Washington, and we're like, we can't go live because our country is under attack right now.
And our poor guest was like, I have family there. Yeah. I don't know what's happening. Yeah.
It was a thing.
I have a dear friend who is a member of Congress, and I thought I saw her hiding on the House floor when they were trying to break in with the guns and everything. Turns out she was safe in her office. And we are just finally in a position as a nation where we have more than one spunky little brown-headed girl who's a member of Congress.
I think we have three.
It is really like a very wonderful thing for there to be other women that I could mistake as my friend.
And I love it.
Right. But I thought it was my friend, and it made me, on top of just the, I am an American, by God, and you don't invade my country. You know, on top of all of that, I was very upset for my friend. And being here in New York, like, I used to live in D.C. And I was like, well, if I were still in D.C., I could drive over to her apartment and I could clean her place and cook her a bunch of stuff and freeze it, you know. And I called her, like, and texted her the next day. And I was like, you know, can I come and, like, I don't know, clean the Capitol toilets? You know, like, what can I do as an American so the people who are charged with the job of securing elections and getting votes ratified, you know, so y'all can do what you need to do. And she said that the best thing I could do would be to just tell people, you know, to tell people, hey, you know, this is wrong. You know, democracy is important. And I was like, well, who am I going to tell? Like, you know, and I thought, I can run. You know, that's something I can do. Like, I can't go on television because I'm just one of millions of Americans. Why would they, you know? It's like, I'm not a pundit. And I was like, I can write. And it wasn't so much that I could write a story about the Capitol to turn people today around, although I would love to do that.
Wouldn't that be great if that's the power we had?
That changes the world. Exactly. Well, you know, I mean, the way you praise this collection, maybe, you know, Miss Magazine actually made a December must read today.
My mouth just.
You ladies are my early adapters. You knew it first.
We usually do.
Right. So maybe it will get mainstream writers. And I pray, you know.
Could I get away with that snap?
Yeah.
I almost punched myself in the face.
I think I must have been talking during that. I don't know. And I kept wondering, but I knew that it couldn't be a standard story. Like, you cannot Freitag period, exposition, narrative hook, rising action, the Capitol. A bunch of people showed up with not tiki torches this time, but I guess flags, and started breaking windows and jumping in and wearing Chewbacca outfits. That is not normal. And Chewbacca was insulted, quite frankly. Okay.
Look,
he would never go for that kind of stuff. Come on.
No one wants Chewbacca insulted.
Right. So I realize, I keep trying to think if there's some other way to, like, refer to that guy, but that's just what his podiums. Like, how tacky do you get? So anyway, I knew that it couldn't be just like and then Perky Young Haley shows up for work. You know, like, it couldn't be that. And I realized that I needed to play with form somehow, and that it had to, that however the story was put together had to be as crazy as the event was put together. But I didn't know, because I've never done experimental writing before.
Some of them are more traditional, just this is what a short story is, but there was a lot of experimental fiction in here, not just one.
Well, because what happened I didn't know how to do the Capitol thing. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. And so I need to, like, do some practice. Like, I need to, like, rev up to it.
So, so were all of those practice to get to, I can't even say the one phrase I want to say.
Don't
about,
say anything. No.
Because you know,
I do. Yeah. Those
you
were
know
my
what I want to say. Whoa. It's all amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. Now,
it's all amazing.
Some I threw away. Like I did it.
That's fair. You can't be perfect all the time.
Well, you know, and it's funny. Like I still would argue that these are not perfect. Like the first story in the collection, Welcome Friend, I kind of hate it. And I put it in there because it worked like thematically. And I really don't like that story.
You shouldn't hate it.
Yeah,
I liked it. I thought it was an excellent piece to start that collection on so many levels. Because I will tell you, I read it and I was like, huh. And then the more I read the other stories, I was weaving them back into it with this overarching thing. I'm like, I see how this works. And it doesn't necessarily need to. You may not have meant for it to, but that's how my brain took it and wove it with the others.
For some reason, like a lot of times short story collections, they can make an individual story seem worse because maybe if it's like the strong one.
I'm sorry that Allison and I both like cracked up, but we've read so much.
Right. Or the stories just seem like here's a story, there's a story, here's a story. But this one I've been reading it over a lot like the last few weeks or whatever, you know, like we had to do our proofing for internal layout, you know, and all of that. And which my publisher did a great job on, just to shout out to her. But When I sat down and I was like reading it all the way through, I was like, all of these being together makes them all individually better. It's like a team or something.
It is.
Going back to how it came together, like I didn't keep all of them. Like I wrote a Choose Your Own COVID adventure where every choice you made, you died. And
why don't we have
that? Oh my God. Did we not all do that during COVID?
I know you have like, okay, so it's scrolling at the bottom. Well, right now it says Jennifer's website, but you have a website and there's like a newsletter to subscribe. Is that a bonus content thing subscribers can get? Or
oh, look, she's like,
if
there's enough
Patreon,
people,
like I have a buy me a coffee. If somebody wants to start a Patreon for my drafts,
I don't know how to do that.
No, but it was so, it was like, it sounded like I was laughing at all these people dying instead of the situation.
No, we all know that nobody on this show is laughing at people dying.
No,
not at all.
No,
I'm just like going to shout that out. Our audience knows that we do not laugh at people dying. Everybody knows I'm always dying all the time.
Well, and even just the inevitability, that is another word, inevitability there. It only took three times to get it right.
That's all right.
COVID, because we were even talking about how those of us who have done everything we can, the fact that that thing is still flying around out there and then mutating and doing all its stuff. Yeah. And then Jen still gets it, even though I've had so many conversations knowing that Jennifer has masked and avoided and social distance and not gone to events she's wanted to and agonized about going to events. Like, do I wear this when no one else is in it? And then you still get it anyway at a place where you shouldn't. And it's just, so the whole, every choice you make,
it makes
so much sense. And I would want to read that. That's all I'm saying.
You know, but I'll take a picture of the page on the legal pad where I sketched it out.
Thank you. That's enough.
So.
No, but it's funny because I basically spent the year putting together all these experimental pieces. And then I finally got to where I was like, I've pretty much thought of every form that I can manipulate into something like the Pier 1 poster. I pretty much thought of everything crazy I could write about that could find a form. And I'm like, and here I am still stuck with the capital. And so I just got in the bathtub for some reason. Like, and I always feel like this is very personal detail, but for some reason,
do it.
I do my best thinking in the bathtub.
There's only 200,000 people watching.
No. Also, most people say that one of the number one ways to get over writer's block for those of us who are writing longer fiction is taking a
bathtub.
Hot shower. Shower, bathtub. There's something about the heat and the water and the moisture. Like, I don't know, humidifies our brain cells or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But the capital story for people who are joining in from home, the capital story makes use of a Snellen eye chart, which Allison and I, having talked about our vision difficulties, it's the chart that starts with a big E at the top and then gets bigger.
I even learned what font it was because when I was trying to do a promotional graphic, it's Optician Sans. I don't have that on Canva. So I couldn't
know that.
It's a thing. I looked it up because, nerd, I wanted to see if I could match it. I couldn't match it, but I tried. But that's a thing. And like, our family, everybody but my youngest has glasses, and we've had to recently do that. I just got my new ones. They wanted to give me 3 pairs because I'm at the point where I need reading glasses and I can't see anything. So like that one hit home personally for me. I'm like,
yeah,
this one hit home for me because I have a really, really, really intense eye phobia.
Oh, you and your eyes.
For certain eye exam things. So I got all the way
never
to the
LASIK.
Oh, me neither.
People got like, all the way to the like, end lasers? Of your story until no. the last page, and I could not.
Yeah.
Did you finish it?
I can't say the point that I gave up.
Okay.
You need because nobody else would give up on this point, but like for me, I was like, and I'm done. And I know it was two pages away from the end.
It's okay. You don't have to read all right. 2 pages, but you're going to want to look physically at the last page.
I did.
Okay, so you know. Yeah, you're fine.
Look, I did that. I was like, I just can't read the words. I'm just going to look at everything.
No, it's fine.
I get it.
So I won't
go. Yeah, there's mentions of like drops and eyes, and that even that was like for me.
So I won't go into detail on how the eye chart is used in a story because I think that would really spoil it for me.
Oh, yeah, no.
It would be spoiling.
Right. You know, however, I was like, what forms have I not used yet in any fiction? Because the way that this story worked, instead of writing the story first and then figuring out the form, I was like, what form can I use to tell a story? And then what story do you use that? And so I was like, well, I haven't used an eye chart yet. And then I was like, what can I do?
Nobody ever has used an eye chart. Ever. So
I thought there's got to be some stupid poem out there written to look like an eye chart. So I'm not doing that. Right. You know, like, and again, nobody's ever done it. And so then I thought of this capital story. And so once it was done, I applied for a grant through the New York Foundation for the Arts. It was the City Artists Corps that was part of like the economic revitalization of New York art scene post COVID. Yes.
I know. I'm like, for those of you who can't see what I'm doing, I'm doing a heart thing.
But anyway, I got the grant, and part of the grant was that you had to read your work in public. And some of this, it's like, how do I, like the fading color, like how do I do that? How do I read that?
I mean, you didn't have like a digital presentation. Yeah.
And this story, like the way I did it, again, I don't want to spoil, but I'll tell the two of you later. Sorry, everybody at home. But
no spoilers.
But the hard part for me on that was figuring out what order to put them in. And also how to not have everybody leave just bawling and crying and really depressed.
I think the order.
I've never thought about that part.
Well, I mean, it's not that I want you to leave. Like,
that kind of fiction, woman. That's just your thing. No, but I think it made sense with a story that starts with welcome friend, and then the note that you ended on makes sense, and there's a journey that goes on there, and it felt complete. Yeah. It felt to me as complete. It didn't take as long, but it felt as complete to me as if I had read a novel. And I rarely get that from short story collections because it's almost like I said, it's like a tasting menu. When you're done, you had a full complete meal that was as satisfying as if you had an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert. But instead, it was these different things that worked together really well. Yeah. The comparison I'll make, and I thought of, I don't know if you're familiar with Ben Folds 5, but it reminds me of the album, the unauthorized biography of Reinhold Meisner, that needs to be listened to in its completion, because to me it's a rock opera, but you have to listen to the whole thing because individual pieces don't make sense. And it's also got experimental pieces, like one that's literally like an answering machine.
Ooh, I don't think I've heard that album. Used to be an album, which now they're just kind of collections of songs.
This one's a specific album that starts with Narcolepsy and has the song Army, which is why I got it. But it's funny because it's
Army.
And I thought, I won't sing the whole album, but I would. But it's one of those things. It's also where I first learned about Chick-fil-A, because Chick-fil-A wasn't a thing in California at that time. And now we have Chick-fil-A's. I'm like, I know that from Ben Folds 5.
It's just so weird.
But now we have just
the weirdest.
But it's that whole thing where they all work together, and individual songs, you may love them more than others. You may have the one you replay the most, but as an album, it is for me. I'm like, I can't dance. Jennifer's the dancer. I would love to choreograph that as a dance ballet.
Well, but see, it's funny that you bring up that whole album thing, because when I was trying to figure out what order to quote read these, you know, in at the presentation, I got in the bathtub again. Like, evidently I spent a lot of time in there. And I kept listening to Abbey Road medley by the Beatles. And I just listened to it on repeat and repeat and repeat. And I was like, you know, I was like, this needs to flow the same way Abbey Road does. Yeah. To where all of a sudden, you know, like you've got like 45 million, like da, 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 Scaramucci, you know, like whatever all the way, you know, or whatever, like all the different languages are that they've got in that one piece, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, like you're talking about Her Majesty, it's a pretty nice girl, but she ain't got, you know, and it doesn't even always flow as far as like the medley, the languages, any of that. But once you've listened to the full Abbey Road and you get down to like Carry That Weight and stuff at the very end, you start to hear, well, there are chords that were in the first part of the medley or in the second part of the medley. And there's a line that is repeating from the middle of the medley, which is kind of amazing considering Paul McCartney just told the producer, slap it all together, you know, but it's just, and it's almost that whole thing when we talk about voice and writing, it was all the Beatles. And it hit me that it was all me. And so as long as something connected back, and I didn't even realize how much until we were putting the proof together for like the inside of the book, there are actually phrases and stuff that I wind up reusing the story in this. And I wrote it. And I
didn't even realize you did it.
Like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. And then I was like, wait, I'm like, that's the exact same phrase that I used back over here. You know, and I'm like, and it's not a phrase like, hi, how are you? Like, it's a very specific
thing.
Like, hold on. And I'm like there were things in Esther that I talked about in Raspberry Sex and Space, you know, you know, and it's like, how?
Okay, but well, we as the reader, we read that and we're like, oh, well, she meant for that to happen.
Well, I did. Like, that's funny. Like when I was talking to my mom about all these little minute things on the proof. Mom was like, well, but honey, do you think the reader will notice? And I'm like, well, most readers buying this know some 19-year-old little fart in English 101. There's is going, well, what did she mean by this? Like, the professor's not going to say it's probably a typo.
I love that.
Or like, we're just writers. There's only so many words that we can do.
Yeah. Or even phrases. And it's funny because I do some developmental editing and help when I'm betaing. I end up doing some of that stuff too. That I'll be like, you use this phrase a lot, consider rephrasing it. But if it's a phrase that ends up almost being the flavor of the piece, that's different because then it's this little nugget that comes back and you go, oh, there it is again. And it's an Easter egg at that point versus being, think of a new phrase, Tarina.
And when you're making the same story, great. But it's like when I was writing these all individually, I wasn't thinking, well, that's going to be three stories away from that.
Right.
You know, it's not even in a bad way. It's almost like how you will have the exact same chord in, I don't know, three out of the seven Beatles medley songs. And that's what makes it work, are just like those three measures that hit the ear that are the same as they were two pieces in the medley ago. And it's funny, like, I don't mean this egotistically, although I am highly egotistical. What all of the pieces in this collection have in common is me.
The denominator is the author. Who knew?
I wrote them.
Often when you have a collection and it's not by the same author, you don't necessarily have that. And you have a theme where they were all told to write to a certain theme. Here, there isn't a theme that you wrote to other than, okay, these do all work together because there is very little superficial connection thematically between Space Raspberries and the biblical story of Esther. So when you took this then to get published, did they suggest any kind of tweaks, or did you say this is the order it is, take it?
Well, and that's the crazy thing. I hadn't even ordered them until I went to AWP, which is the Association of Writers and Writers Program. They have an annual conference. You know, I'd never gone before. I got a scholarship to go. It was like an hour by train from New York. So I went, and I had published with Whiskey Tit, who is the publisher's literary journal, like a year or two ago. So I went by their booth to meet in person and say, hey, thanks for publishing my short story a while back. And Miette, their publisher, said, we would love to see something book length from you. And I was like, I don't have anything book length.
But and then I put them all together.
That's exactly what I thought. And I thought, well, I'll bet you I can put a lot of those short stories together, all the paranormal stuff. And so I took what I did at the presentation. I removed some stories from that. I added some others, you know, and like Raspberry Sex and Space, that was not in the presentation. You know, but that's right. I just love saying that.
It's fun.
But But it's funny. I just put them together and I was like, well, I'll send them to Mia. And then like a month later, she was like, I love it. I'll take them. And she didn't change the order of any of them. There was one story about cancer that I personally removed and replaced with another story about cancer, you know, right. You know, like they're, I don't know. It's like vanilla and chocolate. You're still getting regular ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, but there weren't, she didn't make any, like any changes at all. Now, when we went to format the internal, we had to make some adjustments, like where line breaks and stuff.
I was going to say there's somewhere where the line breaks because of footnotes. Yeah. They have to line up there. Yeah.
We loved it the way it was. And I'm trying to remember, I want to say there was a second half to your question.
No, and I was, it sounds like you already answered the question in terms of like, okay, did they change it? And you explain how, okay, you went to this place that you'd worked with before and they want a book length and you had it if you put them together. But yeah, I'm just, one of my friends is in the middle of edits right now. And the idea of like, they didn't make big changes. She's probably looking at that going, why couldn't I have that? But that's just, well, yeah.
It's funny.
Well, like, we all want that. No, no, we don't edits, want an editor no changes, to say, but it is what it is.
Yeah. All of us.
Ross, happy little accidents.
Yeah.
Happy accidents.
This is the nuggets.
Oh, I feel like I can see a little bit of, an avatar of somebody I like. Amanda?
That's just Amanda D'Amore. I feel like this is akin to Bob Ross. Happy little accident.
And I'm wondering because she has a lovely profile picture of her standing next to a horse.
She is
next to a horse. And I know her. Like, I know, like, I knew the horse and Amanda. That's why I was like, I cannot see anything, but I can see the horse and the beautiful girl.
I love that we know it's a horse and not just some like generic thing, but you're like, I know.
No, it's like a horse and a beautiful woman. I could see that
part you got.
So that being said, we are sadly out of time.
Yeah. We're past time. I want to invite everybody back next week because we have a friend of mine joining us. And see, here's the hard thing. I'm going to be messing up Dee's name because I only ever say Dee. We're going to be having Damayanti Biswas, and I'm going to double check how Dee says Damayanti.
Damayanti?
Be your friend.
In my brain, it's like Damayanti.
Damayanti. I don't know. For the Blue Bar, which I want to let people know is already available if you have this thing. It's a new thing. So if you guys are Prime members, we're not talking Kindle Unlimited. So people going, wait a second, Kindle Unlimited. No, not Kindle Unlimited.
No, this is Amazon Prime. First of all, new. This is an Amazon Prime. It's not super new. It's happened for like years now.
Has it? Yeah. How come I never knew about it?
I mean, I've had it for like maybe 6 or 7 years.
I've had Prime, but this is this thing where it's
There's only 4 books that are usually picked for the first read.
What is this again?
Okay, so there's this thing called first read. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can get a book before it's technically released through that program. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, but the book is called The Blue Bar, and it's by Damayanti Damayanti Biswas, Biswas. I am probably mangling that, and I apologize to Dee for mangling your name.
That's okay. We'll apologize next week.
But we're also going to be 1 hour later because Dee is in, I don't remember if it's Singapore or coming back from India, but it's early morning for Dee, and it's going to be later for us. So it's going to be 4 p.m. for me, 7 p.m. for Jennifer. So come back. I mean, we'll have that on all the promo stuff. But
we'll have it on all the promos. But just please know the Blue Bar is a Kindle First Reads pick.
Yes.
Get it. We've gotten it. We're all doing it.
Have to actually
everyone's
read it.
Everyone's doing it. Hashtag everyone's doing it.
Peer pressure.
Hashtag peer pressure. Any hoops.
Anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Tarina Elizabeth Bell, for your amazing collection.
I will also just like butt in and say thank you, Tarina Elizabeth Bell, for I believe you were the author who said that Vox Vomitus was one of like the
funniest
podcast.
Yeah, a lot of these are pretty boring and dry, let's be honest.
We are
I had COVID this week. I'm usually funnier.
You were still funny, but sometimes you didn't mean to be.
I know. Well, that's fine too. I mean, that's also my entire personality.
Same.
Like, who cares? So,
Jennifer, you just give me the opportunity to fill in with the funny.
Yes. Trina, your book was amazing.
Thank you.
I have a very hard time with short collections with like feeling intense emotional gratification, but I felt that for every single piece of yours. So
thank you.
Thank you. Also, damn you. In the best way.
But in a nice way. Damn you, and we love you.
But I love you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for everybody for being here. Sorry about my COVID brain.
Feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And with that, we'll be back next week, 1 hour later. Thank you, everybody. Bye.